There are fill-ins on the back of the sheet, as much as anything to keep me on track. And given what I was talking about in the children's address, the fill-ins, whether you like them or not, are actually a good way of remembering what is said in the sermon afterwards, so that you can think about it. So last week, we heard about God's call to Abram, later Abraham, to leave his native country and to go to the land God has promised. Raymond actually used a word last week that I had already wanted to include in this sermon today. We might call that a pilgrimage. God called him to a specific place, to the land that I will show you. He just wasn't calling Abram to go and a wee wander somewhere, but there was actually a direction to his journey. So Abram set out in obedience to God's call, and we heard, as Raymond said last week, that that journey was marked out by him praying, hearing from God, building altars to commemorate and to remember what God had done. And so far, it's looking like a lovely before and after story, where life after God's call was defined by the pilgrimage of seeking after the land God had promised. And as with all characters in the Bible, we often find that it's not really a before and after story, where, you know, before he encountered God, everything was awful. After he encountered God, everything in the garden was rosy 24 hours a day. That definitely is not the way. Abraham's call was to go to the land that God would show him. Our call is to seek first, that's the first fill-in, is to seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, as it says in Matthew 6, verse 33. So that is our call, to seek first his kingdom. But, and there's quite often a but, what happens when a trial gets in the way of our journey with God? That's fill-in two. Now, as I started to prepare for today, this is a couple of weeks ago I was doing this, as I started to prepare for today, we got the news that Chris's remission, which we told you about a few weeks ago, had in fact been misdiagnosed. He's not in remission. And so the chemo that he is now undergoing is going to be much more aggressive than his previous chemo. A journey that had been going very well now faces something that was definitely not part of the plan. For Abraham, the trial is famine in the land. What would you say at the moment that your trial is? Now, I've put some kind of examples up there. They were the ones that just came to my mind. You, of course, might have something completely different on the go. But what is your current trial? What is the thing that you're facing right now that could, in your mind, be a kind of deviation from the way that you were seeking first God's kingdom? Because of the famine in the land, Abram makes the decision to go to Egypt. Now, I don't know how good your Old Testament history is, or even how good just the order of events is, but one thing to remember here is that this is way before all the Moses stuff, all the period of slavery in Egypt, all the plagues, all the going through the Red Sea. None of that is even a speck on the horizon yet. So one of the things that we often see is that the Bible uses Egypt as a symbol of lack of reliance on God. There are various places in the scriptures where it says, do not trust in Egypt and blah, blah, blah. But we should also remember that in both the Old and the New Testaments, there are times when God actually commands people to take refuge in Egypt. And I'm going to put a couple up here. In the Old Testament, in Genesis chapter 46, God spoke to Israel in a vision at night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." "Here I am," he replied. "I am God, the God of your father," he said. "Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make you a great nation there. I will go down to Egypt with you, and I will surely bring you back again." So there we have an instance in the Old Testament where people are being told to go to Egypt. And since it's only 4 weeks ago at Christmas, you'll probably remember that in Matthew 2, when the Magi had gone, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said, "take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt and stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So we have in the Bible both instances where we're saying Egypt is a bad place to be going. But we also have instances in the Bible where God's saying, "Get yourself to Egypt and get yourself there right now." It's very confusing. So it's not that heading to Egypt was necessarily a sin for Abram. The problem was that he did not seek God. In the passage Raymond read last week, we had a lot of instances where it said Abram prayed and he built an altar to the Lord and he did this and he did that. There is no such mention of this here. It just says there was a famine and he went to Egypt. He did not seek God, but rather he wandered off on his own way. As we face trials, more often than not, they are accompanied by temptations. We're not going to be singing it today, but there is that line in that hymn, "Have we trials and temptations?" And there's a reason for that. It's because the both of them often come right hand in hand with each other. Abram's temptation was self-reliance, not seeking God, but just deciding and wandering off in his own way. What is your usual temptation during a time of trial? Again, if you could put it back, Karen, to the last one. No. I've put some up there. Some of them are ones I suggested. I also asked Stuart. So they're a combination of ones that we thought might apply. Again, yours might be completely different. But it's helpful to know, what is your go-to temptation when things are going badly for you? What is the thing that is usually the path that you zip right away down that path? Now, the lie that Abram told, or the lie that he wanted Sarah to tell, might seem strange to us. "Tell him you're my sister." However, Abram and Sarai were in fact half-brother and sister. In Genesis 20, we read this. "Abraham replied, 'I said to myself, there is surely no fear of God in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she really is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not of my mother, and she became my wife.'" Now, the issues that we might have with that are not included in the remit for my sermon today. So I'm not going to be going there at all. Feel free to go there yourselves later. So why, in fact, did he do what he did? Why did he say, "Tell them you're my sister"? Well, perhaps it was to save his own skin. Perhaps it was because in the absence of a father, as a brother, he would have negotiation rights regarding any potential marriage for Sarai, and the negotiation process would have given time to escape. However, Pharaoh, as a king who was considered at least semi-divine, saw no need for negotiation. He just went right ahead and married her. On top of this, as we heard, Pharaoh gave Abram great wealth. That great wealth was to cause him a lot of trouble in the future. It would lead in Genesis 13, and I don't really want to talk about it because Colin will be going there next week, I think. It would lead to family division, where the land was not big enough to support all of the wealth and possessions that they had, so they had to split. part of the wealth that Abram was given by Pharaoh would also have included the slave woman Hagar, who much later on, in Genesis 16, would become part of Abram and Sarai's further machinations of self-reliance on God rather than relying on him when God had promised them a son. And they thought, well, logically that just ain't possible, so let's get Hagar involved and we'll just do it that way instead. Last week, we heard God promise this to Abram. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And this is what happens to Pharaoh and his court. God sends these terrible diseases because Pharaoh has cursed Abraham by marrying the woman who was already Abram's wife. The sad thing is that even Pharaoh and his court, who do not know God, recognize that this is a problem. What about our own trials? Trials come to us not as a deviation from our pilgrimage seeking God's kingdom. They're not a reason to wander off thinking we'll come back to seeking God's kingdom at a more convenient time. I heard somebody say somewhere this week that convenience is one of the biggest idols that we face in our society today, the idol of convenience. If it ain't convenient for us, we're not going to be doing it. In the same way that Abram's call was a call to faith and dependence on God, so is ours. Constant faith and dependence on God. And even in times of trial, we have to recognize that succumbing to temptation, whatever your particular temptation is, will always have consequences. For Abram, the consequences were both for Sarai and for Pharaoh and his court. Those consequences, as here, usually involve others. Now, I tried to find some pictures of what these consequences might be. And unfortunately, I just picked two. So if you've personally been involved in either of these situations I've got up in the picture there, I'm not picking on you. They were just the two handy pictures I could find. I'm sure there are consequences of... I couldn't find the picture that was the negative consequence of too much retail therapy, but you know what I mean. Last year, I noted this from somewhere. It's actually in my wee book that I showed you earlier. The fruit of the Spirit in my life can be considered a sign and a measure of my relationship with God. My relationship with God should actively benefit other people. Abram's self-reliance and lack of reliance on God produced a very negative effect on other people. And I really like that statement because I quite like measurable things. I don't like things that are vague and fluffy. The fruit of the Spirit in my life can be considered a sign and a measure of my relationship with God. I can know how close I am walking with God through my demonstration of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control to those around about me, whether it's friends, whether it's family, whether it's people at work, whether it's people that I just meet. I meet them once and I'm never going to meet them again in my whole life. Checkout person in the supermarket, or How is your relationship with God actively benefiting others? And I would challenge you maybe to actually look back on the last week and try to think of times where what you did outwardly, what your outward expression of your relationship with God either had a positive or a negative effect on someone else, whoever they may be. Fruit is called fruit for a reason. When we decorate our Christmas tree, I get my wee baubles out of my box, and there's a wee hook, and I just instantly, I pick it out of the box and I hang it on the tree. Ta-da! There it is, instant beauty. Fruit's not like that. Fruit actually takes time to grow. I'm looking at Colin. I am absolutely no good at gardening of any description. But fruit, it starts with a wee something. I was going to say bud, I don't even know if that's true. A wee something, and then a wee flower, and it's just, And after a while, the fruit grows, and we need to, people that are good at gardening, they cultivate their fruit. They put in the right manure or feed or whatever it is. They prune the bits, they do. But fruit takes time to grow. What am I doing that actually is cultivating the fruit in my life? Or am I a person who would prefer my fruit to be like the decoration on the Christmas tree? Once a year, I whip it out of the box and hang it on. And then 2 weeks later, I take it off and it goes away again for the next 11 months. I'm going to stop there. I think that's enough.